This is Embodied on the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. In recent years, southern states have been embracing the legalization of marijuana. Georgia, Louisiana, and most recently Mississippi have all introduced laws permitting the legal use of medical marijuana, and that has had a groundswell of support from voters. North Carolina, on the other hand, has been slow to follow suit. Hemp farming and the sale of low-THC hemp products is legal in the state, but possession of marijuana products, which are easy to confuse with hemp, is not legal. Figuring out what products are legal to consume and which are illegal can be dicey and confusing. So with us to parse the particulars is Phil Dixon. Phil is a defender educator in the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government. Hey, Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Marquita Wilburn. Marquita is a marijuana pharmacist at My Tree Medicinals in Pennsylvania. Hey, Marquita.
Hi, hello, how are you?
Good. So we're going to talk all about what a marijuana pharmacist does later on in the show, but I want to start with you just helping us kind of figure out this terminology. It can get really confusing because both hemp and marijuana are varieties of cannabis, but there is a difference. So remind us the difference between hemp and marijuana.
Absolutely. So hemp is essentially, the easiest way to put it, an immature form of cannabis. It has very low amounts of THC, which is the psychoactive cannabinoid within that plant, which essentially causes that euphoria that we all may know marijuana to be associated with. Hemp is very high in CBD, which is non-psychoactive, whereas cannabis can cultivate both THC and CBD, THC being the more dominant cannabinoid in that plant.
Got it. Okay, so Phil, in North Carolina, hemp is legal while marijuana is not, but it can be really hard to distinguish between these two products, and that poses an array of legal challenges. So tell us a little bit about some of those.
Sure. Traditionally in North Carolina, an officer has been able to identify marijuana by sight or smell only, and their opinion that something was marijuana was sufficient in court to prove the identity of the substance. That's at least in doubt now, given the existence of legal hemp. We need now to test the product to determine what exactly the THC level of the substance is. Unfortunately, our crime lab is not doing that testing. While there are some private labs that are doing it, and some prosecutorial districts are sending their suspected marijuana to those labs for testing, but it varies district to district now, with some counties effectively having de facto legalization, other counties being much more aggressive in trying to continue enforcing marijuana laws. So it's a mess. I mean, we saw the Orange County DA recently say the marijuana was more or less decriminalized in small amounts in Orange and Chatham counties. That's one approach. Other places would rather try to send the stuff to the lab and see what happens.
So, I mean, yeah, you're mentioning a lot in there. First, the confusion between hemp and marijuana and the need to get that clarified at a lab, and that's not easily accessible, as well as this question around how much has North Carolina actually decriminalized possession. So some people think it is decriminalized for up to half an ounce, but folks can still be arrested or fined. It kind of depends county by county how far the decriminalization goes. Is that right?
Yes, as you noted in your intro, marijuana remains a crime in North Carolina in any amount. Under a half ounce is a class 3 misdemeanor, and that's our lowest level of any crime. But it is a crime. And national organizations often list North Carolina as a decriminalized state. That's simply wrong. The confusion arises from the fact that the General Assembly in 2013 reduced the penalties for class 3 marijuana, or all class 3 misdemeanors, including less than a half ounce of marijuana, to a fine only in most circumstances. So only if a person has more than 4 prior convictions on their record could they even possibly face jail time or supervised probation for possession of less than a half ounce of marijuana. But regardless of the sentence, and often even if a person is eligible for a more serious sentence, they will still only receive a fine only punishment. But that is nonetheless a criminal conviction, which has the attendant consequences. This could, you know, affect your employment or professional license, eligibility for federal student aid, all sorts of other collateral consequences.
The other interesting thing about North Carolina is a big part of this wave of legalization efforts has really come from citizens who have put things on ballot initiatives and kind of the public has voted and said, you know, we want either medical marijuana or recreational marijuana to be legal. In North Carolina, citizens cannot do that same kind of ballot measure. So tell us about why that is.
Right. There's just simply no mechanism under state law or the state constitution for citizens to put something on the ballot. So any change will have to come, any systemic change on a statewide level will have to come from the General Assembly. And there have been bills filed for several years in a row attempting to do that, but they haven't gained any traction in the legislature. So what you're seeing now is individual prosecutors in different prosecutorial districts taking the approach that they see fit. And prosecutors have a lot of discretion under the North Carolina Constitution. And what you have now is a hodgepodge where your likelihood of being arrested or convicted for marijuana depends very much on which county you're in.
So, Marquita, you are in Pennsylvania. You are in kind of a less chaotic situation than we are here in North Carolina.
Yes.
with this hodgepodge. So medical marijuana is legal there, recreational not yet. But tell me a bit about what the experience has been like of being in a state that has legalized marijuana for treating medical conditions. What's that been like?
Well, it's been beneficial, and it's also been a little chaotic for those that are very interested in using it and may use it recreational at this time. And they're very interested in thinking, because we are medically able to consume marijuana, that means that anyone who needs it or wants it has access to it. So it gets a little confusing at times trying to differentiate the difference between a certification towards medical marijuana use versus just because you feel you need it, you can come and purchase it because it's available in our state.
So how do you get that medical certification?
Well, first you have to go through certification through a medical marijuana doctor. Not every single doctor is registered with the state in order to certify individuals, but those that are, patients typically go to them, and they have to either be diagnosed with one of the 23 medical conditions, the most common being chronic pain and anxiety for one within our state right now. As long as they've been diagnosed with either of those symptoms or either of those conditions, they are then certified by these physicians. Once they are certified, they go through registration through the Department of Health, and then that is when it goes into line with the medical professional at the dispensary to kind of guide that individual through, you know, different options that they may have within our program, recommendations, consultations, just along that throughout, you know, the entire journey.
Phil, is there any move to legalize medical marijuana in North Carolina? Is that part of the conversation?
Well, I believe it's part of the conversation overall, but it's, again, I'm not aware of any real efforts at legislation in that regard.
So
certainly folks are advocating for it.
Got it. And we'll talk with you a bit more later in the hour about this recent move and push to decriminalize, which is a whole other piece of the conversation, in addition to legalizing medical marijuana and recreational. Marquita, Pennsylvania is still debating whether or not to legalize recreational marijuana. How is that conversation fitting into the picture of what already exists with medical marijuana being legal?
Well, I think we have proven great success within our program. And with that, it has brought up the conversation along with many of our politicians throughout the state advocating for it. I think we have done well in surging patients as well as the success within our patients. It definitely creates that conversation. It's moving a lot faster than what I envisioned it to. It's actually coming up now, as opposed to I thought it was going to be another 3 to 5 years, but it honestly may be in talks a lot sooner than what we thought.
I want to get a bit into your story now, Marquita, and we'll continue this after the break. But tell me a bit about how you first came to use marijuana, long before you were working as a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so my first try was in college. You know, in college is very accessible. But it was mainly used just in a recreational, just for fun, simply. It wasn't until about my second, third year of pharmacy school where anxiety became extremely heightened for me, and I began to use it in the medical way. I saw it mitigating my symptoms way more than any pharmaceutical drug that I was currently studying. It did amazing for me. It's done a lot for a lot of my family members. So I've always been an advocate for it before it became very legal within my home state. So I kind of used it much sooner than it becoming legal, but I've kind of foreseen this, you know, down the line for me. I kind of foreseen it when I was studying in pharmacy school.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with you, hearing more about your experience as a marijuana pharmacist after the break. Phil Dixon will join us a little bit later in the conversation. Again, Phil is a defender educator in the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government, Marquita, a marijuana pharmacist at Maitree Medicinals in Pennsylvania. Just ahead, we're going to continue our conversation with Marquita, looking more at medical marijuana. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is Embodied on the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Medical marijuana is now legal in 36 states and D.C. Pennsylvania is one of those states. We've been talking to Marquita Wilburn, who works as a marijuana pharmacist there. So before the break, Marquita, you were talking about your early exposure to marijuana recreationally in college. Then you started pharmacy school, and marijuana pharmacy came to your attention. It's kind of a developing field. So tell me about that and how you became interested in it in a professional sense.
Yes. Well, like I said earlier, I was always very interested in it. It was something I always wanted to intertwine within my pharmacy career. It just wasn't set in place yet. In 2011, when I graduated, it just wasn't in talks at that time. I studied in Virginia and then started working in Virginia. And then I moved back to Pennsylvania, which is my hometown. And it was definitely legal there once I moved. I just did the work in order to be certified, in order to be a candidate. I then met Maitree, which is my home that I love, and it just kind of has sprung from there.
So as a pharmacist, you're obviously trained to understand how a substance acts within the body. So without getting too deep into the science, could you kind of tell us about some of the ways that you use that knowledge to work with patients, use your knowledge of how various substances, both the THC and the CBD within a product, kind of interact with what's going on with a patient?
Yes. So I like to explain it in the most layman terms as possible. When you get very scientific, as you said, it kind of loses a lot of people. And it's kind of a benefit that marijuana has been around for ages. And the bad stigma is that it makes you, you know, it gives you that high feeling. So leading with that, letting people understand the differences in the two main cannabinoids, THC and CBD. Simply, one gives you that euphoric stimulating high. The other helps with many other mood disorders and body inflammation. So simply breaking it down in terms to their symptoms is the best way that we try to do so. There are some that are very nerdy and want to understand the ins and outs of the endocannabinoid system and all your receptors and how these cannabinoids work. But outside of that, it's a very simple, like, lock and key method, as we call it. Your cannabinoids and your receptors are your lock and key. They naturally act with one another to help balance certain processes and regulations in the body.
So even in North Carolina, I mean, you can get CBD products that are derived from hemp. Is there a big difference mm-hmm. between CBD that's derived from marijuana versus hemp?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hemp, you're getting, if not 0.3%, much, much less than that. So a point where we call it trace amounts of THC. THC and CBD have a very synergistic relationship. So when you're utilizing CBD in the hemp formulation, you may not get the most potent effects of that CBD as you would if you were to get it from a cannabis-derived CBD. I feel like that's one of the main things I talk with a lot of new patients. They're like, oh, I tried CBD. It did not work for me. Well, where did you try it from? Did you try it from a dispensary? No, I bought it online, or I got it from the gas station even, you know, and I simply go into explaining there is a major difference between the two. So much so that I do essentially recommend the CBD dominant or the CBD cannabis derived CBD. And they'll call back and say, oh, my God, it actually is a difference. Hmm. That's because it has that THC to help boost the effects of CBD.
How about the difference between medical use and recreational use? I mean, it seems to me like the line is very blurred. How do you see it from your perspective?
I see it in a sense that you know exactly what you're getting. There's so much more to cannabis that we even know that we, you know, we don't understand all of it at this time. But what we do understand, we understand an entourage effect of cannabinoids and terpenes that from every, you know, testing, every batch, it's tested by the state before it's sent out to dispense. So we know what's in the product. When you're purchasing marijuana through the black market, you have no idea what you're getting. You don't know the strain. You don't know where it was derived from, who grew it, who had their hands on it, if there's any toxins in it that you should stay away from. So I highly recommend recreational, yes. However, the medical is what is more safe and effective for individuals if you're utilizing it to really help in your medical, you know, in your medical journey.
Do you have concerns as someone who is steeped in the research, as someone who knows how the drug interacts in the body, about a broad movement for legalization, or do you think that would be a net positive?
I think there would be a broad discussion about it, but I think it's very black and white. I think it's more of a legal political thing than just the talks of if this is a safe enough product for you. I think we do understand it is very safe, and it has extreme medicinal benefits to it. It's just an idea of just trying to get it through the legal, you know, ramifications.
Marquita Wilburn is a marijuana pharmacist at My Tree Medicinals in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for talking with us, Marquita.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Moving now to North Carolina, where one recent poll showed that more than 70% of North Carolinians support the legalization of medical marijuana. Among them are advocates at organizations like We Go High NC, a group that seeks to decriminalize and destigmatize marijuana use of all kinds in the state. Joining me now is the co-founder of We Go High, Ash Harris. Hey, Ash, welcome to the show.
Hey there. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me a bit about We Go High NC and what got you all started.
Yeah, We Go High started at the end of last year, pre-pandemic. I think of my life now as pre-pandemic and post.
Yep.
And we started because, you know, we found that a lot of our conversations, me and my two co-founders, really revolved around how and why, you know, we have privilege to access this plant on the black market, but still use it as much as we need for the medicinal benefits that we find coming from it. And so many other people who are not us are sitting in jail for the same exact practice of healing and medicine. And so we started to sort of say to each other, you know, almost as a joke, that no one should be in jail for weed, but it sort of grew into this bigger mission that we wanted to share with a lot of other people, that we know a lot of other people share a sentiment that no one should be in jail for weed. So we work to normalize and destigmatize the cannabis that people are already using to make sure that folks understand how safe and how good it is for you.
And I think that's, I mean, a sentiment that kind of encouraged folks all around the country to support legalization. We heard from a cannabis consumer in Colorado who shared her experience, and I want to play that clip for you now.
Hi, my name is Risa. I live in Colorado, a state where cannabis is legal. I voted for legalization because I felt that the courts and jails and prisons were clogged with people who used and sold small quantities of weed, which is a waste of state and federal resources. Also, I felt that every time I wanted to buy cannabis for my own use, I was endangering my family, my friend who sold it to me, etc. And so it's really nice to be able to walk into a store and show my driver's license and be able to ask for what I want or need. I appreciate it as a creativity tool. I use weed for pain relief as well. Cannabis salves that have THC and CBD in them are great for muscle soreness or wasp bites. Using weed has enabled me to become less dependent on other substances. I recently gave up drinking alcohol, and I think part of it is being able to have a little toke when I want to.
That's Risa Keller of Colorado talking about why she uses cannabis. I'm here with Ash Harris, co-founder of We Go High NC. So we'll talk a bit more about decriminalization efforts a little bit later when we bring Phil back into the conversation. But I'd love to hear some of the cultural argument for it and what you're trying to do by kind of making it less stigmatized to use it at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important to say that we think that there is actually no difference between recreational and medicinal, and that all cannabis use is medicinal. Because if you think about it, like I said, pre and post pandemic, I feel like even, especially in these times where there's this huge collective anxiety, any offering you're giving yourself of self-care, any way that you're in introducing joy into your life, that's an offering not only to yourself, but also to your community. And in that way, even if it's you're using cannabis to have fun or have a good time or relax, all of those are endeavors toward wellness and healing. And we think of that as a medicinal practice. And so, you know, that being said, like, it feels almost confusing that we're still sort of talking about all of the regulation that needs to happen, knowing how safe cannabis is in general. You know, we sort of challenge the myth that prohibition or the, you know, regulation of medical or recreational use, we think that just sort of furthers the effort that prohibition has to further mass incarceration and things like that. So we see it as sort of splitting hairs. But understand that people are coming from not knowing a whole lot about cannabis in general, which is understandable in this climate.
So you've been conducting a cannabis census survey that's on your website, and where you ask this wide range of questions trying to get at people's beliefs and behaviors. And I'd love to know what you have heard so far. What are you hearing about how people feel about it culturally?
Yeah, it's interesting. We sort of started the cannabis census wanting real hard data and facts and, you know, wanting to be able to sort of back up some of the claims that we had just with anecdotal evidence to add to this larger research that everybody else is doing. But what we've found is that a lot more people are interested, like your guest caller, in sharing the story of how cannabis has changed their lives. And I think it's amazing, the story that you played for us, that this person in Colorado, which is a green state, they've legalized. People forget that Black people are 4 to 10 times more likely to still be arrested in green states for having cannabis. And so, you know, I think sort of under the cannabis census, we have some spaces where people can tell stories, and we just get an overwhelming number of people telling really beautiful stories about how cannabis medicine has improved lives, and just wanting also to share that and to show that as visibility makes us all safer, I think. And so people wanting to tell their stories about cannabis so that, you know, we can all have more access, I think is overwhelmingly what we're getting from the census. And I'm so grateful for those stories.
I want to bring Phil Dixon back into the conversation with us. He's a defender educator at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government. And Phil, I mean, you heard Ash mentioning some of the statistics around disparate impact of various attempts at legalization, and love to hear a bit more about this in North Carolina. We heard yesterday from a panel appointed by Governor Cooper that called for decriminalizing marijuana. They were voting to recommend the state decriminalize possession of up to 1.5 ounces, really based on some of these same racial justice arguments. So tell us a bit more about what we heard from that panel and the effect that could have on North Carolina.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, even setting aside the racial justice implications, which are significant, class 3 marijuana and the more serious misdemeanor offense, class 1 marijuana up to 1.5 ounces, these are very common offenses in the state. Class 3 marijuana, less than 0.5 ounce, is probably the most common class 3 conviction that occurs in North Carolina, and around 30% of all misdemeanor convictions that happen in misdemeanor court are for drugs. And most of that is marijuana and marijuana paraphernalia. In 2019, there was around 30,000 North Carolinians charged with one of these offenses, and about 8,500 of those people were convicted. And as the task force noted, when you compare usage rates among whites and non-whites of those that are convicted, people of color are disproportionately charged and convicted by a significant amount. And as far as the effect of decriminalization, my favorite law school professor, Thomas Ringer, used to say, the devil's in the details, right? It will depend on how this works out. I mean, will someone be allowed to grow a plant for personal use, or would that remain felony manufacturing? You know, what's the age limit going to be? What are the amounts? But in essence, I mean, presumably, any decriminalization effort would eliminate the tens of thousands of criminal prosecutions for small amounts of marijuana in the state. And given how much space that takes up in misdemeanor court, this leads to fewer convictions and prosecutions overall for citizens. And less people will end up with a drug conviction or end up even being processed through the court system, whether or not it results in a conviction. This would likely free up resources in district court to focus on other offenses like driving while impaired or domestic violence. And as the task force noted yesterday, it would reduce or hopefully eliminate the racial disparity that exists in marijuana arrests and convictions in the state.
I mean, and as we've learned from other states that have legalized, there a lot can go wrong with kind of blanket legalization in terms of continuing to cause disparate impact, like Ash mentioned, those statistics from Colorado. So, Ash, I wonder for you, I mean, what do you see as the best way forward for North Carolina to remain sensitive to the ways disparate impact can happen with blanket legalization and to kind of acknowledge what the public wants in this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously, like, this last election, we would have liked to have seen a lot more people who are pro-cannabis and understand the economic and health benefits that cannabis can offer the state and people in the state. But to continue to work towards understanding who your local candidates are and what they believe in and that their values match yours. And, you know, honestly, if you don't find anybody who fits that bill to run for local office, that people have that power and should be empowered in that way. But I think also just visibility, sort of folks who do use cannabis, including CBD, including smoking weed, all of the things that we use it for, all of the ways that we use it, being visible in that way can send a really powerful message of what the people want, how the people are behaving and what the people are needing. People are willing to risk their freedom every day for this medicine, and it must be something really, really important that we need. And so I think just listening to that and continue to make the changes in small ways with local elections that we can.
As you have worked on visibility and making it more visible, making the use more visible, what have you noticed in terms of the biggest sticking points that you're hearing existing stigma that people still feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a longtime community organizer, it's always tricky to ask somebody to put themselves in harm's way for a direct action or for a cause. Any protests, rally I've been to, it's the same way. And, you know, I've always believed that the most dangerous thing about marijuana is police. And so in that way, asking people to be visibly breaking a law feels kind of scary. And we know that everybody has a different relationship to law enforcement and a different susceptibility to being targeted by law enforcement. And so in that way, asking for visibility means asking people to do direct actions that break laws. And so that just like knowing your dose with cannabis, knowing how much your body needs and can take and not take is really important for safety. Also knowing what visibility measures you can take. And, you know, saying no one should be in jail for weed, we believe, is something that anybody can say and believe whether or not they consume cannabis. And so that's sort of why we push this idea that no one should be in jail for weed, because it undermines the idea of criminality and that cannabis causes these problems, but it doesn't.
As a user and as someone who's kind of looking at this survey and hearing other people's stories, what do you get the sense of in terms of how using cannabis is different from other kinds of substances that people may turn to for similar kinds of effects, relaxation, pain relief, et cetera?
Yeah. I mean, I think that generally speaking, what I'm seeing is like sort of a crumbling of some of the infrastructure that I grew up thinking would be there, like health insurance. I'm currently uninsured, and you know, there are ways that if I have a chronic back injury, along with like yoga and breathing exercises, which are things I can do on my own, cannabis helps my body relax to allow that kind of healing. And that for people who are experiencing that, sometimes not knowing cannabis or not having access to it, people come home from a long day and want to unwind with alcohol, which doesn't have any of the medicinal benefits that cannabis does and does cause a lot of problems that cannabis doesn't, but it's readily available. Anybody over 21 can get it. And so we think that increasing access and the visibility of the stories of how cannabis can have so much positive benefit without having these negative side effects allows people just to start thinking differently about what they consume and how they consume it. Pharmaceuticals, same way. There's all these side effects for sleeping pills and different things that a very organic, very easy to grow plant could be curing, spending so much less money, requiring so much less infrastructure, you know, and chemicals, you know, things like that. So I think just adding to the story sort of allows people to make decisions for themselves and not be given making decisions based on myths and untruths.
Ash Harris is an advocate for the legalization of cannabis and the co-founder of We Go High NC. Ash, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Phil Dixon is a defender educator at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Government. Phil, thanks so much to you as well.
Thanks again.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.